Hello, this is Terrence Brennan from artisanalcheese.com in New York City, also referred to as the Big Cheese.
You're listening to iWine Radio. We're going to switch gears slightly here and talk about cheeses. Cheeses with wine, cheeses on a plate just to serve as a course, cheeses to cook with. And our expert is Max McCallman. Now, Max is an authority on cheese and author of The Cheese Plate, the definitive book on the art of creating perfect cheese courses. And this is a big deal in restaurants, cheese courses. And of Cheese, a Connoisseur's Guide to the World's Best. Now, he had set up, and we're past Valentine's Day, but he had set up recommendations for cheese courses, cheese plates that would be appropriate for Valentine's Day. But looking ahead now, Max, I suppose we have St. Patrick's Day, we have Mother's Day, we have Easter, other opportunities for people to do a little more celebrating at home than maybe what they normally would do. And of course, if you live in a cold climate, there's always the option for fondue. And so, Max, I'm curious, do you eat cheese every day?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we see the trend is that Americans are eating more cheese each year. We're eating about three times as much cheese now than what we were eating in 1970. Not only are we eating more cheese, we're eating better cheeses each year. Our connoisseurship, our appreciation for cheese has grown dramatically, and I would say especially over the past 10 years as cheeses are available in wider markets. And people realize it's not just for cooking.
Right.
The cheese and wine course can be a platter. And it doesn't have to be elaborate, but the simplicity, the ease, and the elegance of cheese and wine entertaining for two people, for one person, or for larger parties, makes more and more sense.
In America, people tend to have cheese as an appetizer. You know, guests come over, they give them a cocktail or a glass of wine, they have cheese and crackers or cheese and bread. But in old world traditions, a cheese course is not served before a meal.
Oh, some cultures a little bit, but sometimes it is the meal, and near complete food. If it's a quality cheese, and if it's near complete food, then that's pretty much all you need: cheese and wine. And the wine has a good a synergy with cheese, and most cheeses and wines, more often than not, they do work pretty well together. And of course, if you're a little bit thirsty, and wine is a great beverage, if you're a little bit hungry, cheese makes the near perfect food. And you put them together, and they work in synergy. And the wine helps break down the proteins and the butter fats and the cheeses to make them easier to digest. Make use of it too, but to have it at the beginning of the meal is perfectly fine. And I like to have cheese. I have it in the morning. I cook with it sometimes. I have it before a meal. I have it after a meal. After the meal is more of a French thing. And the rationale for having it at the end of the meal is if you have a rich meal with many complex foods, a little bit of cheese can aid the digestion. And so you have these foods in your stomach, a little bit of cheese at the end. If you feel like you couldn't eat another bite, maybe it's the best time to have a little bit of cheese because it will help to relax the stomach a little bit and aid the digestion of the foods you've consumed.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. And then at the other end, at the start of a meal, the good rationale for having cheese at the beginning of the meal is it helps to prepare your stomach for food you're going to consume. And on top of that, it also provides that near complete nutrition, satisfaction. And so people that will have cheese at the beginning of the meal, what they do is they find that maybe they may not eat as much. And we have in this country, we have eaten too much. And I think if we have a little cheese before the meal, then you might not eat as much.
Right.
Good,
right?
Because your body knows that you're satisfied with that near perfect food.
When you're serving cheese, let's say before a meal, do you serve chunks of bread with it, or crackers, or fruit, or just by itself?
Well, if it's a harder cheese, such as a Comté or a Gruyère, a Beaufort, or a Pyrenees hard sheep's milk cheese, or something like a Manchego, or a harder cheese, a cheddar type, then perhaps you don't need the bread. But if it's softer cheese, the bread does help. And if you're doing it for looking for the affinities that cheese and wines have, and you have more than one cheese and perhaps more than one wine,
mm-hmm,
available to you, then the bread a little bit of bread can help to keep the palate fairly neutral.
And okay.
The butter fats and the acids left behind by the wine and the cheese, so you can taste the next combo. It's a lot of fun to do. This is pretty much what I do for a living, is eat cheese and drink wine. And I write about it and talk about it. And I'm also quite thin, too, by the way, which surprises people that someone with my build eats cheese for a living.
Well, and do you go on daily walks? Is that your main exercise, is walking?
Today I'm out in the country, and so it's beautiful outdoors. It's sunny today. It's cold, but it's sunny. And so because I live in Manhattan, the walk is important. But there are components in fine cheeses, in most cheeses actually, that can help you keep your weight down, that are good for your heart, your skin, your hair, your arteries, for your neurological system, and there's so many benefits in cheese. And cheese has been so badly maligned for so many years, and people are sometimes they're advised to avoid cheese when it's probably, for example, if you want to lose weight, I recommend the cheese diet. It's not because there are the proteins, and there are also some great butter fats and fatty acids, for example, such as conjugate linoleic acid, which you can buy over the counter, but it's a lot more effective when it's introduced in the form of cheese, because all the other things that are found in fine cheeses, cheese being derived from milk, our first food, it must be near complete, because if that's your first food for the first several days or weeks or months of your life,
yes,
it must be pretty good. And so it does provide satiety, a little bit of cheese, and people sometimes say, well, I could live off of cheese, and they may not realize how close to the truth they actually are. We don't eat as much cheese as the French or the Italians or the Greeks. The Greeks, by the way, eat more cheese than anyone else.
Really?
But they don't have the problems with obesity that we have in this country, and they also drink more wine. But all three of those countries, the highest per capita consumption of cheese is Greece, and then second and third alternates between Italy and France. And we're catching up, but we have a ways to go before we eat as much as they do. And they don't have the problems with cardiovascular disease either. It's part of the Mediterranean diet,
mm-hmm,
and the French paradox, that a little bit of cheese is actually a good thing.
Max, let me ask you this: when you're talking about cheese in a diet as being a perfect food and something that will in fact facilitate weight loss, you're not talking about processed cheeses. You're not talking about Velveeta and that sort of thing.
Well,
there are
certainly worse foods, and there is some milk product in those processed cheeses, but the But the fine artisan, by artisan, handmade traditional methods of making types of cheese that have been made the same way for centuries offer more nutrition. If the animals are well cared for, if they have a diversity of plant species, if the cheese has all these nutrients from all the plants, and this is, we forget where our food comes from. I think this is, Americans are recognizing that the source of the food is extremely important.
Yes.
And when you look at a package of cheese and paint, it's a beautiful label on it, and it may be colorful, but what matters is the flavor and the texture, the aroma, and for cheeses, the old world styles of cheese, and now increasingly being produced in the United States, some of these types of cheeses are going back to the old methods of making that adhere to the appreciation of the land and the care of the animals, and then you have a much more nutritious cheese, and then you have that satisfaction with a little bit of cheese.
Do you make cheese yourself at home, even like a homemade ricotta or something like that?
I have made cheese. I go to dairies. I visit dairies frequently, but I prefer to enjoy cheese.
Okay. Yeah.
I get to eat a lot of different types. That is what I can do.
It's not like you can go and milk your own cow or goat or sheep and make it.
But other people do it so much better.
Yes. We're going to be right back.
Excellent.
We're going to continue this conversation, learning about cheese and wine and healthy living. If you want to purchase cheese, I recommend you go to vinvillage.com. And you can learn more online at the Cheeses of France as well. I must tell you, if you've never had Comté before, you have to purchase some. And if there is not a cheese shop where you can buy Comté locally, you can purchase it online, certainly.
Comté is a remarkable cheese in the sense that if you speak to just about any good cheesemonger in the U.S., but around the world, they know Comté and they are fans of Comté.
Jean-Louis Carbonnier, thank you so very much for talking to us today about Comté cheese.
Well, you're very welcome, Lynn. Thanks for having me on board. And certainly, you know, people should visit Comté.com for more information on the topic.
It's been a couple of years, but over the course of Wine and Dine is now in its 11th year on the air. I've interviewed Terrence Brennan a couple times, who was founder of Artisanal Cheese. He likes to call himself the Big Cheese. And I didn't put two and two together until just on the break. Our guest, Max McCalmen, happens to work at Artisanal. He is Dean of Curriculum for Artisanal Cheese. And Max teaches classes, including classes about combining wine and cheese. And Max, so what were you doing before you discovered cheese as a career? What were you doing before that? Were you traveling around the world? I mean, what were you doing?
Immediately before joining Terrence in 1994, I was fortunate enough to be able to take a 2.5-year sabbatical to raise my first child. Previous to that, I was in the wine world a little bit more than the cheese world.
Okay.
I loved cheeses. I didn't have a career in cheese until Picheline, with its cheese program. It's world-renowned cheese program was launched in late 1994, and so helped develop the Artisanal Bistro program, and then later the Artisanal Cheese Center, with a classroom where we teach various courses on cheese, not just with wine, but with cognacs or with cheese and beer, or how to make a mozzarella, or
I'd love to learn how to do that.
And we have a master class, which is intensive 2.5-day class. We offer it over 2.5-day period, so people, if it's more convenient for them to come to Manhattan and spend a couple of days, then we can combine the entire master program, master class, into that 2.5-day period. And it's taught by our director of affinage, Monsieur Denis Cotin, my colleague. He's the I like to refer to him as the headmaster of the at the cheese center. His main responsibility is to make sure the cheeses are ripening correctly.
And in fact, that's what affinage refers to.
Correct. All right, to bring them to their peaks and then maintain them at that level. And I work with them, and I help teach a class, of course. And we also have another member of our faculty that helps with the mini classes, but also with the master class on his areas of expertise, which are the Iberian cheeses. He knows a little bit about all of them, but he likes to focus on his areas in cheese service and cheese care and cheese basics, cheese handling, and all that.
Oh, yeah.
People are curious about it.
The people who come to your master classes, are they chefs or people from restaurants that are wanting to become more professional with their cheese program?
Some chefs, but we sometimes we have, for example, you mentioned restaurants. Sometimes the cheese program at a restaurant is managed not by a chef, but perhaps by a sous chef or a garde-manger, or it might be the sommelier or the maitre d'. And but we also, the class is open to the public, and so we also have cheese enthusiasts or people that are considering making a career out of cheese or opening a retail shop. And so we have an interesting cross section, and these are small classes. We keep the enrollments fairly small so we can focus on what the person is looking for out of the program.
Oh my, it's I mean, who the heck doesn't like cheese? Are there people that are allergic to cheese?
I think that there are certainly some people have a low tolerance for cheese, some people mistakenly believe that they can't have cheese because they think that, well, there's certainly lactose in cheese, and adults are not really, most or many adults don't tolerate, they don't drink liquid milk.
Yes.
Fine. But when it's made into cheese, the lactose is virtually eliminated in the process of cheese making. The lactose is lost. So even though they may have a low tolerance for cheese, it's not because of lactose. Some people do have allergies to proteins that are offered in milk. So I work as partly as a cheese allergist, if you will.
Really?
If they have, if they say they love cheese but they can't tolerate cheese, then I'll say, let's focus on a type of cheese and see how you tolerate that, as long as it's not big problem.
Right.
All cheese in general, of course. But then we find that actually there is still a diversity of cheese types that they can enjoy. It just might not be all cheeses, for example.
Could maybe some of the mold or bacteria that's used to make cheese is what they're allergic to.
And I think that it's maybe, again, it's maybe not an allergy, but it may be just a tolerance thing.
Okay.
And it may not be a lifelong problem, so they can enjoy their cheese later. And I like to recommend that if they say they can't have certain kinds, or they think they can't have certain kinds of cheese, well, let's look at an aged goat's milk cheese, an aged chèvre, for example, because they are the easiest ones to digest.
Yes.
Even though some people just don't like goat's milk cheeses, they are actually easier on the tummy than sheep or cow.
Right.
And sheep are a little bit easier than cow. And so if it's an aged cheese, it's usually easier than a soft, runny cheese. But you mentioned moles and bacteria and
yes,
all that. Well, the word bacteria can scare people away.
Yes.
But forget that we are surrounded by bacteria, and it's found in all foods. and there are actually more bacteria in our gut than there are cells in our body. So we are like bacteria farms, and so bacteria has had a bad rap too. There's some one cheesemaker recently they said cheese making is kind of like farming bacteria, which I thought was kind of interesting. It may not sound delicious,
yes,
but it is
so
it
true
is reality.
Do you ever work with yogurts and cheeses made from one step beyond, like a Lebni or something?
Well, at the Artisanal Cheese Center, we mostly focus on crafted cheeses that are made into cheese and not the other dairy products. We do have the making mozzarella class, but that is about as far away from table cheese, if you will, as we go.
Okay.
By table cheese, the cheese that you might have is a cheese course, and mm-hmm. not so much the cooking cheeses, or yogurts, or those others.
Okay.
They're good too, but we like cheese better.
Boy, it just sounds like a such a fun job. You're always learning something new, and you're always meeting interesting people. It sounds never a boring day.
No, and that's because the cheese have their seasons also, and so I do. In the cheese world alone is it has many facets to it. There's a little bit of history. There's the economics. There's the politics. There's the the chemistry. The botany. The biology. The zoology. I knew that I loved cheese. I've loved cheese all my life, but when I became a full-fledged cheese guy, maître fromager for Picheline, I didn't know that it was going to end up being such a lifelong study.
And so interdisciplinary.
Interdisciplinary, exactly.
Oh my. Well, okay, so let's say that if I was going to have a dry rosé with dinner tonight, and who cares about the food, just focus on the dry rosé, what cheese would you recommend? We're in the 20 seconds we have left.
I would say probably maybe a, I'd like to try a variety of cheese types, maybe one goat, one sheep, one cow, something from the Pyrenees, a sheep's milk cheese, perhaps a young chèvre, perhaps from the Loire Valley, or an aged cow's milk cheese would be my. I'd like to have a variety. Then we have a better chance of finding good synergy with that rosé, depending on what the varietals are that are in the rosé.
Oh, my heaven. And you definitely are a wine man. Max McCalman, thank you so very much for joining us today. This has really been our pleasure.
My pleasure, Lynn. Thank you.
iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.